So, good morning, everyone. It's Dave Weiner, Saturday, May 9th, 2020. So I was talking with a friend of mine the other day. He's not a programmer, but he's a smart guy and interested in this kind of stuff, in programming concepts. And so conversation got around to Not Invented Here and Postel's robustness principle. And remember, I'm talking to somebody who's not a programmer. And yet the concepts were easy to explain. And it's always struck me that Postel had sort of hit on, at least half of Postel's law, had hit on some basic fundamental design principle that was far more general than just for computer software. But in computer software, since evolution happens so quickly, or can happen so quickly, you can see more clearly why the conservative side of his law is just obviously the right way to go. It says basically be conservative in what you send and liberal in what you receive. So what that means in terms of the network, let's say, well, this came up in my life in terms of XML. That's when I confronted this, not for the first time, because it had come up in Apple events. I had Userland IAC Toolkit, and Apple came out with something that was equivalent called Apple Events, which was bizarrely different in terms of how it functioned. I remember sitting down to read the manual, and you know, before I even opened the book, I paused and said, how could this possibly be different from what I'm doing? I mean, I imagined it was just different words, right? Different names for the same concepts. And I was gobsmacked as I was reading it that I had no idea what the fuck they were talking about. And yet I had just built not only this layer of functionality, but the layer on top of it. So not only was I prepared to understand it, I think I had done everything you could possibly do to be prepared. I didn't actually understand it. And so, and what Postel, it comes up in terms of XML, and you could just do it in terms of JSON. It's exactly the same question. Let's do it in JSON. So let's suppose you're writing a machine, a piece of software that both transmits and receives JSON encoded data, which is just text, right? So suppose somebody sends you something in JSON that's supposed to be in JSON, but it doesn't validate. It isn't valid JSON. And however, you can interpret it. You can make a good guess as to what they were trying to say and just go ahead. And so that Postel says you should do that. And then, but there's a whole other school of thought that says, no, you shouldn't do that, because what happens when you do that is you make the standard meaningless, and all of a sudden you get barriers to entry. Whereas parsing JSON is a relatively simple thing. You can do it in a week. I was going to say in a weekend. You can certainly get something up and running in a weekend, but to really get it finished, you maybe even need a month to do it. I've written it. I've written both sides of JSON. So I know from what I speak. It was a little more complicated than I thought it would be at first, but it's easy. But all of a sudden, if you're the second or third or 15th product in the market, and there are already other things out there that are reading JSON and writing JSON, but more importantly, reading it here, and they're all being very liberal in what they receive, you have to implement all of the liberalism, and you don't even really know what it is, assuming they didn't share their source code or document it, which they probably didn't, because the reason they liked it is because it gives them a competitive advantage. It means basically the muddier the definition of the interop protocol, the the harder it is to enter the market. Now, the whole point of having the standard in the first place was not to lock users in, to prevent that from happening, so that we can build higher castles. I mean, if you have to pour so much energy into just basic communication, you're not going to have much complexity left to build a higher sort of, I think of it as a castle. You know, the program is not this sleek, sort of beautiful skyscraper that just sits there and does nothing. Like, if you look at the new World Trade Center in, you know, southern Manhattan, you look at it, it's a massive building, and you realize it's never going to change. In the whole time it exists, it's going to be exactly what it is. Obviously, the insides are going to change a little bit, but that's like the user interface. That's like saying, I have a web server that I'm going to put new websites on. It's different. And that building is never going to change. But a piece of software is not like that. A piece of software evolves, and it gets annexes, and it gets added onto by people that don't understand what's the core engine. So they build it on in a way that means they don't have to understand it. And you end up finding that the ability of a person to come in and work on the code, it requires more just to get up to speed, so that the product eventually stops evolving in any really grand way. And that's, by the way, that creates another fork in the road. Do you come out with a broken version? You know, do you do a version that can't run the old software? And anybody that's been down that road and says, oh, well, I should have done that, well, I don't believe you. The first time I put a breaking change into Frontier was in, I'm going to say, 1998, when we did the Windows version. And I had telegraphed that something that I was doing would be removed. On the day that I put it in, I said, don't depend on this. It won't be here when we finally ship the version. And so the day we shipped it, I took it out, as I said I would. And the outcry and the cursing and the flames. And I mean, for whatever reason, we tolerated that I hated it that people reacted that way, so disrespectfully. I mean, what the fuck, you know? And I put it back. It was called Toys. I even gave it a name that made it sound like it wasn't permanent. It was a class of verbs called Toys. So anything that was in Toys would get put somewhere else. I just didn't want to decide where it belonged, because I wanted to get familiar with it before I had to make that decision. You know, Frontier was an exercise in evolution and in living with your mistakes. This was the thing. And it still was beautiful language. We did a good job of evolving it, and we did it carefully. And at the time, I had a lot of experience with programming languages. So a lot of it was really good, but there were things in there that were fucked up. And we lived with them. And it's where I learned a lot about what I know. You know, the adage is like, one way to do something is better than two, no matter how much better the second way is. That's one that a lot of people, I think, really should understand. That's also, by the way, another way of saying Postel's robustness principle on the other side, on the sending side. So anyway, so long build up. Here's the actual anecdote. Today, I'm looking at, let me back up just a little bit. I wrote a function for PagePark, which is the web server I've been working on now for about 6 years. It's one of many projects I work on. It's because I want to have my own web server, because I've written my own web server and I like the way my web servers work. And nobody else makes that web server, so I make it. And that's what PagePark is. And so I was adding the ability for PagePark to do plugins, and plugins in JavaScript code. So a website could be completely defined in JavaScript code, not in static text or, you know, redirects or macros or templates or whatever. No, just 100% code, you know, because it comes up. Sometimes, you know, you need to be able to do that, because the functionality requires more logic than you can put into a simple regular expression, which is the other way of doing things. It's good, it's useful in places to use a regular expression, but sometimes it's more complicated and you need to have some logic in there, and that's when you go to JavaScript for it. So, and I've wanted this for like forever, and the problem was I didn't know how to do it. I had looked, I mean, there was eval, that was one possible way, but that didn't yield good results, and I'm not going to go down that tree into why it wasn't good. And then there was the VM module, and that didn't work well either. The idea of the VM module is that it gives you a sandbox. You can run this code in a sandbox, which is great. And it means that I could run code for you, even if I don't know you. That's the purpose of it. And it's a wonderful thing to be able to do because you're walled off from getting to anything other than what's in your own space. And you hope it's good because if I run your code and you can manage to get into my space, all of a sudden you have access to stuff I don't want you to have access to. But that wasn't the application here. The whole idea was I was going to write code that goes on the web server, and the same security system applies there as applies anywhere else. And I want you to be able to have access to the internals, at least some of the internals of the system, so you don't have to rebuild everything. You know, I've got a high-level platform sitting inside there, and I don't want to rewrite that whole platform for every plugin. Notice I said I don't want to, and I have the permission to access it all. And VM obviously was no answer for that, and the eval method was not going to be very robust in terms of what kind of information I could share back and forth between the two, because eval is a very crude tool, and it's a useful one, but it's too crude for this. And so as I got more experienced with Node, I started developing my own packages, and this isn't a new idea for me because I've been building modules of functionality going all the way back to when I was writing C code in 1978, and then UCSD Pascal had a very nice, what do they call it, units. Units are basically modules, packages. They call them packages or modules in Node, but it's the same idea. And that goes all the way back to the late 70s, early 80s. So the concept, the idea, the strategies of how to hide, you know, what do you hide and what do you expose? This is not new to me, but the way it all works in Node, I didn't really get fluent in it until I had built levels, not just one package, but levels of packages, and evolved them, and you get a feel for how this whole system works. And I was and I had this idea. I said, okay, how about I call them filters because that's what we call them in Frontier. So I'll just make it a module. I'll say that's going to be our unit of extension. You put a module in the folder for the website. Each website in PageBark gets its own folder, and the domain name is the name of the folder. So it's a really nice little routing trick. It's cool how it works because you can just look at the disk and you can see where the folders are and you know where to go to edit your content, and you can hook it in via any file sharing system that you might have, Dropbox, Google, whatever they call it, and you know, any of the, you know, NFS and whatever. There's one for Windows, I forget what it's called. And so that's what I did. I said it's a module that has one entry point called filter, and filter takes a set of parameters and they're objects, and they can be very rich, and so it's very easy for me to provide more stuff coming into the filter, and I can give you a set of routines for returning results. So you don't have to reimplement everything sitting there in the web server that already knows how to process files. Say your algorithm is all about just locating the file. Well, you shouldn't have to redo the whole web server's logic for how it serves a file and it's very rich in terms of that. It knows about various different kinds of content, like, you know, Markdown and OPML, which is one of my favorite formats. So no need for you to re-implement all that. So all that's provided, and it worked beautifully. Now, I had to do a little bit of a hack because they cache packages in Node, and I had to, you know, basically, if something was the whole idea, the beauty of this, by the way, is that, like, changing one of these filters is just a matter of editing a file. You don't have to reboot the server. You don't have to compile the filter. Nothing. Just put it in the file and reload the page, and it's running. This was one of the absolute best things about Frontier, where there was just no overhead in terms of going from making an editing change to being live. It just was live. And it was made it, I miss it all the time. I mean, I tell you, working in Node, it's clunky. There's a lot of steps to deploy things. Even though I've smoothed a lot of those things out in terms of the development system that I've created, there are just some things you can't smooth out just because of the way Node works. Say you want to load a new version of a package. Well, you have to do an NPM update or an NPM install, and then you have to reboot the app. There's no way around it. You can't load a different version of a pack. I mean, you could actually, now that I think about it, but it doesn't do that. So you do have to do all that. And it's not hard, and, you know, it's just steps. And the more steps there are, the less you can focus in and zero in on the problem you're solving. Because, yeah, just because you can't forget the complication. It's just always there. So, and it worked. And it was wonderful. It was efficient. It was easy. I documented it. I was just, oh my God, this is the greatest thing. So after a while, I started wondering if actually way before this, I was wondering if anybody else was doing this, because I looked for prior art. I wanted to know, was it even possible before I even try it? I mean, it turns out it was possible, but, you know, maybe there was a deal stopper. And there were actually some problems. I tried requiring the FS package, which is built into Node. So it's like, of all the packages that should work, this would be one of them. And it did kind of work, but it created other problems that cost me a bunch of time in debugging to realize that it was just not working, that FS wasn't working in there. But I could still I could still pass FS in as one of the things. So it's one of the things that's passed in the object that goes from the environment to the plugin, to the filter. So these weren't insurmountable problems. They just weren't, some things didn't work as you would expect and as you would have hoped. It basically, Node wasn't written to do this. And you're kind of doing a hack. And the fact that it works actually is kind of a little bit scary, because if you depend on it and you're using something that isn't documented, they could break it in the next version with no fanfare whatsoever. And you'd be trying to figure out what the hell went wrong, right? Because after a while, you just sort of, you forget it's even there. Or other people coming in didn't even know it was there, okay? So I happen to mention this. I actually called my friend Chuck to mention this. I wanted to ask him if he had ever seen anything like this. And because I've known Chuck for ages. He understands my language. When I talk about something, I mean, Chuck, when I say I'm looking for something like this and it's something like we did in Frontier, Chuck knows what that means. So, but he's also working in Node these days, and so it's a good combination. We're also really good friends. And so he said, yeah, you know, it's funny because we're using something. I'm going to have to find the name of it. I keep forgetting. Let's see. It's got to be right here. Yes. It says, I'm using a thing called require from string. It's got hyphens between the names. And goddamn, it does exactly what you're doing, Dave. I'm not imitating him very well. He's from Southern Virginia, so he talks with a bit of a Southern accent, which, because I went to school in the South, I bet I don't know his accent, so it's whatever. It's like, Anyway, sorry about that. And I like groaned a little bit. Oh, I was kind of hoping I was the only one who was doing this in a way. But, okay. And then he showed me how it works, and I looked at it, and I said, I read the docs. I read the docs 3 or 4 times, because that's how you have to do it. You read it once, you go away, you come back the next day, you read it again, you go away, you come back the next day, you do it again. Every time you go through, you see it in a whole new way, and it's important you have to spend the time in between, because your brain is processing it all the time, even if you're not aware that you're doing it. And so the next time you read it, you figure things out in a whole different way. And I could see, yeah, I'm going to have to use this. So I concocted a project to do this around. I had a package. One of the first things I wrote when I came to Node was a thing called Node Runner. And Node Runner runs scripts from folders and runs them every second, every minute, every hour, and overnight. And each one has a folder with those names. Put a script in one of those folders, and it runs according to when it's supposed to run. And it's, you know, it saves you from having to write apps that just sit there and wait for that time to come, and then they do their thing. It just removes a bit of complication, makes it a little bit easier. Yeah, it didn't turn out that I actually used it a whole lot. It was built on eval, so it was a little bit clunky the way it worked, and I didn't really trust it. And so I didn't build on it, but I had it sitting there. It was already designed. It was a perfect candidate for this. And as I built it, and it's finished. It's Node Runner 2. You could see it in my directory on GitHub. My account is scripting. So I could see that, yeah, this works. I didn't have to do the hacks that I was doing in the other case, because, and then Chuck mentioned something to me as I was complaining a little bit. He said, look at the number of times this thing is downloaded. And I did. And it was like, oh, okay, I see what's going on. It's like everybody's using it, or everybody's using something that uses it, or using something that uses something that uses it. It's at the base of the tree. A lot of people are using it. At some point, they should just suck it into the, you know, Node kernel, kernelize it, is what we used to call it in Frontier. You know, something becomes so atomic, basically. It's just, it works. It's been tested. Everybody uses it. You might as well just go ahead and suck it into the kernel and just completely lock it down. Because at some point, you don't want these things to change. You know, I'm a big believer in you don't break users. I mean, I don't buy any of the shit about, you know, you can break users on the, you know, major releases. No, you can't. And that is part of Postel, by the way. It's the conservative part, you know. It's far more general, by the way, than people seem to understand. It's not just about code, and it's not just about you. It's about everybody. It's like we all collectively have to obey the conservative part of the robustness principle. So, all right. So fast forward a month, and now I'm at the point where I want to bring that functionality from the Node Runner 2 thing that I did. I want to bring it into PagePark. I want to do it right. Because I think, for example, I will be able to use other packages if I use this other routine. You know, if I use require from string. Not only that, the really big thing is it won't be up to me to maintain this thing. It'll be something that I can use that other people are doing. And that is the thing. That's the reason why I will do this and chuck my code, because it's a sort of unprogrammerish thing to do. It's not the kind of thing most programmers do. Once you have it working yourself, there's this thing. You just want to use the code that you wrote. There are a few advantages. It really is frozen if you wrote it. But on the other hand, the advantages of using a conservatively maintained package that other people are working on and building on is that you become harder to break. the cost is bigger. Nobody will break you by accident if you're using the same package that a billion other programmers are using. Whereas if you're using a package that only one user is using, you, nobody's going to give a shit if they break you, unfortunately. It's kind of like Trump and, oh, let's leave Trump out of this. This is a developer podcast, and I've been talking 25 minutes. So, and this whole thing bubbles. So yes, I will use require from string, and maybe it'll get me all kinds of things that I don't get from. Maybe I could put a package.json in that folder too, and add dependencies to the filter or whatever. I mean, these can be lots of different kinds of plugins for web server. Web servers like to have plugins. And maybe I can put my own package.json files in there. I mean, this is a big question. I don't know if they let me do that or not, but it would be nice if they did. That these things really can be autonomous pieces of code. And there'll be other things that I look at too. There are, like Forever is a very important module for me. I use it for all my servers basically. And I'd love to get that functionality in here as well, because web servers need to run apps. It's more than just plugins. There's a connection between an app and a web server. And if you don't build that out in a careful way, you end up rewriting the web server everywhere, which I kind of do already. But because I modularized it, because I did it after I had started packaging everything, I have a thing called Dave HTTP, and that's how they all do it. Actually, not true. There are a couple that really cook their own servers, but most of them use Dave HTTP. And so that'll mean the evolution process, the, you know, changing, swapping in a different engine there will be easier because they all use the same interface. I can just emulate that interface, or at least I'll have a way of searching for all of them. So the moral of the story may not seem very earth-shaking. It's just, you know, all hail Postel. You got it right. Be conservative in what you send. And that means if you can take variability out of the world, it's worth doing. And yet most programmers go the other way. They look at a problem that's been solved and they say, well, how could I solve that problem again? I just want to strangle them. No, that's not what you're supposed to do. What you're supposed to do is find things that are better than what you've done and replace what you've done with that. And that's how we make progress. So anyway, thanks so much for listening. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.